Hero Hype episode 49. I am Caitlin, and I am joined here, as most of the time, by my co-host, Danya. Hi, Danya.
Hello.
So this is a little bit late. We are recording on Monday, Halloween. So none of the week's shows have aired for us yet. So we are getting this out before everything airs. And I will be watching The Nightmare Before Christmas once we're done here.
Yeah.
But before we get started, if you want to get in touch with us, reminder, you can get us at Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast, or you can email us herohypepodcast@gmail.com, or you can post on this post at hypeable.com. We haven't heard from very many of you guys since we've been back. So come talk at us, guys. We want to hear what you're thinking about things. So we are going to start with a brief history this week, and I will turn that over to Danya.
Yes, so this week we have a brief history of Miss Martian. So Megan Morse, aka Miss Martian, first appeared in 2006 Teen Titans Volume 3, number 37. She's one of the few remaining Martians and is most often associated with the Teen Titans. She was a team member in the animated series Young Justice as well. Though she appears to be a green Martian like Jean, she is actually a white Martian, one of the species that wiped out the green Martians. Megan was sent to the Vega system during the War on Mars by her parents. After learning about a surviving green Martian on Earth, she travelled there to find him. She came to Earth with her parents, but they, along with a number of other white Martians, were captured by the US government and summarily executed. As the hero Miss Martian, she is looking for rehabilitation of her more cruel white Martian instincts, as well as redemption for the actions of her people.
Yep, and if you'd like to read about any more stories, you can find that on hypeable.com.
Yes, there's an expanded version on hypeable.com that goes into a few more particulars about Miss Martian, which Caitlin so wonderfully covered after she was introduced last week.
And we will get to that in just a few minutes.
Yeah.
So moving on to TV, there was no news again this week.
Seriously, so it's been like a TV wasteland for news. It's been super
weird.
There
have been like super brief interviews that just really haven't on their own been worth writing up. So yeah. It's pretty dry right now. They're just in the middle of filming stuff, so not all that much is going on.
Yeah.
So we're just going to move right into our TV discussion. So I guess we can start as usual with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which I didn't watch until this morning because we're going to continue the trend of being like not loving Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., apparently.
Yeah, and it's still one of those things where I'm like, by all rights, nothing massively has changed, really, when you look at it. But for some reason, it's just my interest is waning. And I can't pinpoint it still, really. But I did remember that it was on last week, which is an improvement on the week before, where I forgot it was on. But the reason I remembered was that in the morning, Caitlin had sent me a message being like, I went to sleep before Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started airing. I finished all my Flash stuff and I went to bed and I forgot about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And that reminded me that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was on. I feel like I need to set an alert on my phone now.
Reminder, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is on.
Yeah. I mean, I have to seek out all of the episodes separately because they're not on TV right now for the UK, so yeah.
But we have a good piece of feedback about our feelings towards S.H.I.E.L.D. that we'll address later. But so this episode, Lockup. So we have the whole team going in for a jailbreak because they are trying to get Robbie's uncle out because the crazy ghost lady is after him. So what do we think the end game is with these ghosts, and more importantly, why do we care?
Honestly, I don't know where they're going with it at all. Like, I can't even think that I can't even think of anything that it's quite like from the comics to kind of draw on for figuring it out. It's just super weird and ambiguous and doesn't... It just seems to be meandering more than anything else. It doesn't seem to be moving in a solid direction, but yeah.
Yeah, I realized while I was watching it today, I was going, you know what it is? I don't get where this fits in with everything else. Like when you had Hive as your, this is obviously connected to everything because the team was connected in bringing him to Earth, and he is all about the Inhumans, which, you know, there are Inhumans on the team that they care about. So it's very personal. And the only person that this is personal for who is even adjacently related to the team is Robbie, and he's another character who's just come in this season. So it's just, it feels not, just doesn't feel like it fits with everything else, because we have this whole plot with S.H.I.E.L.D. and we'll talk about that in a minute, but that's, you know, relevant to everything else that's gone on before. But I'm just not sure where this stuff is fitting, and it's, maybe that's why it's just not working so much for me, because on its own, I think it's fine, but I don't see like where it fits in terms of everything else that the show has done before.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's kind of, I mean, we're getting some good stuff for just Robbie, I guess, but it seems to be that's the kind of weight that that's the character weight that they're going with this year. Like, they're putting everything behind him, and they're letting that guide the show. But again, it's just kind of for me.
And that's not to say Robbie's a bad character. I find him very interesting, but he's definitely sidelining a lot of the other characters that we already have that investment in.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with that. That's kind of where I was getting to in a sort of roundabout way, is that it feels less like an ensemble show right now and more this is about Robbie and Robbie's story. Which, you know, I get it for the fact that they need to introduce this character and get him, like, in a place where we're, like, super invested in him and what's going on and where he's been and get his motivations and everything, but at the same time, it's kind of like, but what about everyone else? We're just not getting enough really good stuff for everyone else to balance it all out.
I agree. But speaking of Robbie, he finds out from a gangster that happened to be in the prison that they were breaking into that the shootout that paralyzed his brother wasn't just an accident. They weren't just in the wrong place at the wrong time. That was an actual hit that was ordered by somebody. But the guy he talked to and ended up murdering didn't know who it was. So that changes things a bit. Turns out that there was a reason before Robbie ever became Ghost Rider for him and his brother to be attacked. So what did you think of that?
That was actually a pretty interesting revelation. Like, it was good because it was something I was not expecting. I just like that there's probably something more to Robbie and his family than he's letting on. And I really, really want to learn a little bit more about that. There's something about, like, the ground level stuff, like learning about people's lineage and history in, like, a really ground level way, like about who they were as people before these, like, spectacular amazing things happened to them. Like, that's the real meat of character stuff that I'm super interested in. So the fact that there's gonna be more to them than just what we've seen so far, that's great. I just hope it's balanced out a little bit more with everyone else.
Do you think Robbie or his brother was the real target of the hit?
Oh, that's a good question. I think, do you know, knowing S.H.I.E.L.D., it'll be Robbie would be the real target, because then that would give him more angst about his brother being caught instead.
Though it would be an interesting twist if the brother was, for some reason, targeted when he's seems pretty innocent.
Yeah.
But we don't know enough about that family other than that the uncle was involved at this think tank.
Yeah.
That ended up creating ghosts. But
yeah.
So that was an interesting bit that I'm sure we'll find more about.
Yeah.
And then our other plot line in this episode was Simmons was having to deal with giving her lie detector test, and she ends up getting out of it at the end. But we'll come back to that because that was pretty great. But the S.H.I.E.L.D. director, he is just, I wrote in the doc, is Sketchy McSketcherson.
Super Sketchy McSketcherson. Like, so sketchy. Oh, boy.
Yeah, he comes out on national TV, which I was kind of amused to see George Stephanopoulos. He is an actual TV anchor anchoring this debate that he was part of, which was kind of funny. So he was on this debate and he had Simmons like feeding him stats and numbers through an earpiece, but then he eventually comes out as an Inhuman on television. And so that apparently brought his approval ratings way up. So he's definitely playing the politics of the whole thing. But at the end of the episode, he meets his opponent, who I guess was the same woman we saw at the end of the last episode, whose brother was stuck in the Terrigenesis or something that was weird.
Yeah.
But she had all the footage of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and Robbie in the prison, and so she's gonna blackmail him.
Of course. It's nothing that, it's not a series of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. without a little political blackmail. Right?
Mm-hmm. And then speaking of blackmail, we also have Simmons, who
yeah.
pretty much calls our director out on lying about one of his, I didn't quite follow this. There's something about whatever happened in Vienna that isn't quite true. And so she caught the hint of him lying. And so she calls him out on that and he gets her out of the rest of the lie detector tests. So that was pretty smooth on her part.
Yeah.
She continues to be a high point for me this season. I've really enjoyed Simmons. Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the material that they're giving to her this year. I just wish that there was a little bit more. Because it's some of the strongest stuff that they've got.
Yeah, she's having to play a lot more politics than she's used to. And she's finding her way around it, which, good for her, because she's a scientist.
Yeah,
that's
you
not
can,
technically your thing.
You can also see through some of this how she was able to survive undercover as a Hydra agent way back. Way, way, way back when.
Like, oh, that just made me miss Bobby.
Oh, I'm sorry. But it's true, right? You can kind of see how she'd be able to, like, stay in control of that kind of situation. It's kind of been a revelation for her as a character, because we didn't really get a lot of her undercover to see how she'd been operating day to day, but seeing her this season, it really does shine a light on how she can adapt, like how good she is at adapting to different situations in order to survive, which, you know, is a really cool side to see of her character.
Agreed. So, I guess about the director. What do we think of him at this point? What's his game?
God, I don't know. It's really weird because nothing seems to be like lining up, and maybe I'm just not as invested, so I'm not picking up on the hints as easily, but I have no idea what anyone's end game is this season at all. It just seems like very unclear what direction they're heading in, but I have no idea. Do you have any thoughts?
I don't, other than it's going to have to tie in with this ghost plot line at some point.
Yeah.
I have no idea how they're going to come together.
Yeah. Ugh. Maybe they're just being, like, really subtle. And when it all comes together, we'll be like, well, we're idiots.
It could be. Or it could just be very unclear.
Yeah. There is also that.
In the words of Sokka, it was really unclear. But yeah, so he's sketchy, more about Robbie. Daisy is continuing to self-flagellate herself, and May calls her out on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty much the gist.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, let's move on to Supergirl.
Yes.
So this episode brought in Linda Carter, previously known as Wonder Woman, as POTUS, which was pretty awesome. And Kara was super fangirly, which was adorable.
She was so fangirly. Like, she was freaking out about meeting the president. Which, you know, if I had the chance to meet Obama, for example, I probably would be about the same. Really, like,
But our big, so the POTUS is in town because she's going to sign the Alien Rights Act. So the aliens are being granted rights and have the option to come out of the shadows and become full citizens, which is pretty amazing and definitely echoes real life immigration issues that we're facing. This episode had a lot of real life echoes in it.
Yeah.
And so we had some who thought that's a great idea, like Kara. Some who thought it was a terrible idea, like Lena, sort of. She's kind of in the middle of it, though. Kara goes to interview her about her thoughts, and she shares that she has this device that will detect who aliens are. And I thought this was horrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's like tagging and numbering the other so that you can catalog them. And I mean, what do you do with that information? Well, the same thing that anyone did with that information at any point. Just look at Japanese internment and look at what the Nazis did with the Jewish people and the people who were gay and pretty much anyone who wasn't beautiful, blonde, and blue-eyed. Like, there's some definite connotations for, like, why this is bad. Very, very bad.
Yeah, I compared it to the yellow stars in my recap of this episode. I was very uncomfortable. Yeah. And I was very uncomfortable that Kara came around at the end.
Yeah, I don't think that being able to detect aliens is a good idea. I mean, even taking it down, like, a notch to just being something like, because we know that a character is going to come out this season on Supergirl, let's do that parallel. So it's essentially going to be as if you would be able to tell if anyone is gay or a lesbian or bisexual and you out them, essentially. It's good that they have the choice whether or not they want to make it known that they are an alien or not. But it is not up to someone else to make that decision for them.
Yeah, and we see, especially with the introduction of the dive bar that we'll talk about in a minute, that there are a ton of aliens on the planet who are just trying to blend in and live a life.
Yeah.
So it's very much like the aliens that Kara is having to fight. They're very much the exception, not the rule, of the aliens who are on the planet right now.
Yeah. And you think this is one dive bar in one city, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It would be very insular to think that they are the only aliens on the planet. You know, if there's that much of a concentration of aliens in that city, how many are there on the planet? that have these dive bars all over the place. Like, it's... Yeah.
Yeah, so I was very uncomfortable with Kara being like, okay, I understand, that's fine, at the end.
Not fine.
It's really not. So it felt to me like Lena was putting a very friendly face on bigotry.
Yes, definitely. And the other thing is, like, Jean has a really good point right at the start. He was like, you know, we're the lucky ones. We look human. We can make ourselves look human. We don't look strange to people. It's easier for them to accept us. But one thing that he's learned from also being a black man in the time that he has lived as Hank is that people don't like people who look different. So there is an othering of aliens that would happen if they were forced to come out and have to show their true selves and their true skin, or, you know, if they aren't able to blend in as human, like, it's just really, it's really not great. The connotations of it are just really bad.
Agreed. So let's talk about the dive bar, because I just am so in love with them introducing a setting like this. And it kind of reminds me of Willy's place on Buffy, where the demons went and hung out and ate chicken fingers, basically.
For me, it reminded me of Mac's bar in the Dresden Files, which is basically a neutral ground for anyone, like any kind of... supernatural person or anyone involved in, like, the magic community can go there, and it's basically like neutral ground. Everyone is safe there. Nothing bad happens at Max. So
I love this. I love that they've created this setting, and it seems like they're gonna continue going back there. So love it. And also with aliens, I guess we can start with POTUS.
Yeah.
She walks away at the end, and her face shifts, very much like at the beginning of season one when we kept seeing Hank's eyes glow red, and we were like, oh my god, he's Cyborg Superman, and then he turned out to be Jean.
Yep.
So I feel like this is sort of a red herring in the same way, like, oh my god, she's been, like, taken over by an alien or something.
But she's probably going to have been an alien all along. And
a good alien.
Yes, because there's nothing necessarily that we've heard of that's been happening at, like at a presidential level that's been untoward when it comes to her. She seems to be a pretty beloved and respected POTUS, so I don't know that she's gonna just come out as evil. Like, that doesn't make sense. You would think that she, if she was in a position of power, and for however long she's been in that position of power, she would have done something by now.
Yeah. And if she's a friendly alien, her wanting to sign this Alien Rights Act makes complete sense, because she's trying to help aliens like her.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that would make a lot of sense.
So I expect we'll find out more about that later, the way we did with finding out that Hank was actually Jean.
You think it'll be like a mid-season reveal?
Probably. So also alien reveal. So POTUS and Jean were kept having discussions, and Jean didn't love the whole idea, but she encouraged him to go out and live in the world. So he goes to the dive bar.
Yeah.
And who does he meet? He meets another Martian. We have been introduced to McGann, the last daughter of Mars.
I literally screeched when this happened. Like, I'm shocked that, like, nobody heard me from across an ocean, because I was, like, literally freaking out.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure I heard you across the Atlantic.
Yeah. That's legit, because I did have a big screechy, oh my god moment, and I'm so happy.
So I didn't realize until after the episode, because the actress playing her looks very young. She's 44.
What?
She looks 25.
Are you for real?
Sharon Leal is 44.
My god. I thought she was in her 20s as well.
I did too. So I was like, oh, it's gonna, like, she looks like she could be a much younger aged Miss Martian. But if she's 44, are they gonna play McGann as being closer to Jean's age, or is she still gonna be young just because she looks so young?
Oh, that's so interesting. Oh, man. Oh, I didn't realize she was... Damn.
She looks good, doesn't she?
She does look really good for 44. Like, I want to look that good when I'm 44. Holy crap.
I want to look that good when I'm 30.
Truth. Truth. Oh, my God. Yeah, sorry. Mind blown.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing, isn't it? So that completely shifted my perspective on the way they might treat the Jean and McGann relationship.
Because it's going to be less, like, niece? It's niece she is, wasn't it?
On Young Justice, at least.
Yeah, on Young Justice, she was his niece. So
yes.
That's definitely not the way that they're going to be going with this, probably. Because the ages just won't work out. Oh my god.
Unless they just ignore that the actress is closer to David Harewood's age.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't look it.
She really does not look it. Oh, I guess we'll find out soon. Yeah. But
I, just looking at her, was expecting them to kind of go the mentor-mentee relationship that they usually have. And then I found out that they're very close in age, the actors are. And thought, I wonder if this will turn out a different way.
Yeah, I think that would be quite interesting as well, to see how another Martian feels. Oh.
It would be quite a twist if she and Jean didn't get along at all.
Oh my god. That might break my heart a little bit, though. Just because I have so many Young Justice feelings, so...
I mean, I imagine they will by the end, but it would be kind of a twist if she, like, wanted nothing to do with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, you know, she did try to peace out pretty damn quickly to start with. And maybe that's because she's actually a white Martian and therefore really didn't want to see a green Martian and et cetera, yeah, et cetera.
Seeing him freaked her out.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm very interested to see where this is going to go, but we have McGann.
Yeah.
And then also introduced in this episode is Maggie.
I like Maggie a lot.
I think she is awesome. And yeah, Alex is totally the one who's coming out, because Maggie and Alex are totally going to be a thing.
Yeah, I would agree that that is... absolutely the direction they're going in. Alex had this, like, longing look at her when Maggie was like, oh yeah, I've got a date, so I'm gonna go on my date. And Alex just, like, stares longingly after her, and I was like, they're going, yeah, you gay. You so gay for Maggie. Holy crap.
They have such good chemistry.
They do. And I really like that Maggie challenged Alex's perspective and pushed her, like, to move out of, like, the narrow view that she's had of aliens on Earth and look at it from a different angle. Like, I really like that Maggie challenged her on that, because, like Alex had said, that she'd gotten so settled and so used to the fact that most of the aliens that she has to deal with on a day-to-day basis are really not great. They're pretty dangerous. So she forgets that there could be any other kind out there, with the exception of, you know, her sister and Clark.
Which is something Kara deals with too, with Mon-El.
Yeah.
They both have to face their prejudices, because Kryptonians have the prejudice against the Daxamites.
Yes, they do.
And Kara has to face that and realize she doesn't treat him fairly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a whole theme of this episode, is characters overcoming their prejudices.
Yeah. Which I really enjoyed that, especially to know that Kara has her own as well, because she was like very, very open and accepting of like all aliens until she found out who Mon-El actually was. And then she kind of proved that everyone has prejudices somewhere, whether they're inherent in your character or that you've been brought up to think a certain way and you have to push yourself to think outside of that box.
Yeah. I still, like, one of my favorite lines from this episode was when he was like, who are you trying to contact? He's like, I was sending a distress call. Why did you do that? Because I'm in distress. That was so great.
I like him.
He's sassy. Like him.
He is very sassy. Though also, the when he finds out that he's the last of his kind, pretty much, like, that broke my heart. I was like, oh my god. Because they were keeping it from him through the whole thing, and you just knew, like, you were sitting through this whole episode thinking, it's going to come out, and he's going to be devastated, and he's going to crumple, and it's going to be really horrible to watch, and I really don't want to see it. And then it happens, and you're like, no, someone hug him. God damn it.
Interestingly, the Daxamites are part of the group in the invasion storyline in the comic books that the four-way crossover is based on.
Yes, so I wonder if we might see some survivors.
Yeah, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
Just they're tying it in there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I loved this episode. I thought it was great. And I need more of Maggie and Alex in my life.
Yeah. I really do want to see them working together a lot more. That was great.
All right. So, The Flash.
Yes. Yes.
I hate to say it. I did not love this one.
I kind of agree. It was very right. This was more of a non-episode than the Magenta episode. Like, the Magenta episode was pretty good in that it felt like a filler episode, but it did a lot of really interesting things still. Whereas this one just felt a little bit like, okay. Also, I feel really cheated out of my Leonard Snart. Okay.
That was a big disappointment because they were hyping it up. They're like, the synopsis was like, Wentworth Miller is back. Isn't that exciting? And then he was in a flashback and then he was a hologram.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, narratively, I get it. So they don't have to work around him being dead. And they didn't have to come up with an explanation because he wasn't actually there.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of hoping they would and be like, guess what? He's still alive somehow, some way.
Yeah.
So that was kind of disappointing for me. Also, it felt to me like Mirror Master was very much a one-off meta of the week. And
right.
He's almost as important a rogue to the Flash as Captain Cold.
Yeah. Which I was just like, this can't be a standalone villain. It can't, right? Because he's in so many comics. It's like, this character has so much material that you could mine for this villain and to make them really interesting and to even carry an arc with them being a main villain. I don't know what I was trying to say there.
Is that our episode title?
Yeah. Main villain. Oh dear. But yeah, it just, I'm not ready for Mirror Master to be a one and done villain.
And maybe he won't be, but when Snart was introduced, it was very clear he would be back. And it did not feel that way the way they left him in Iron Heights in the metahuman wing with the anti-reflective surfaces. Like, it very much felt like the way they treat other metahumans of the week.
Yeah. And the thing with his power is that, you know, it's really interesting what he can do with it. Like, we saw very much that he was pretty formidable with his power, especially being able to trap Barry. So there's so much more. They could have turned him into a longer arc, which would have been pretty cool, but like at least a multi-episode arc to introduce him and have him running parallel to Alchemy.
And maybe he comes back second half of the season, next season, I don't know. But it didn't feel like the way they treated Snart, even though he Mirror Master is a character Flash fans have been looking forward to seeing because he's such an important rogue in the comics. So that was disappointing to me.
Yeah. Was kind of cool, though, that he was working with Leonard prior to the particle accelerator exploding. I thought that was quite cool, that they were kind of in a gang, sort of, before the particle accelerator exploded. So they almost had a rogues gallery before they had powers.
That must have been one of the missions he wasn't working with Mick.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was going on. Maybe it's just too much budget because they did some really neat effects with the way he jumps in and out of mirrors. And maybe he's just a very expensive rogue.
Maybe.
I don't know. We'll see. If he does come back, we'll revisit our disappointment.
Yes,
a bit. But it just didn't feel that way, the way they treated it.
Yeah.
This episode also had Jessie suiting up, which I love her suit.
Yes, I think it looks really damn cool.
And she goes on one mission, and that's clearly enough to send her back to Earth 2 to be a superhero on her very own. And I was like, what? That makes no sense. Wells is like terrified of her getting killed using her powers. One mission. Okay, you're good.
Yeah, I didn't get that either, especially because she's like, I should probably stay here and train a little bit more. And everyone's like, no, you're cool. No, everything's cool. You're good. And it's like, no, I don't think I'm good. No, you're good. You're good. You go. You go save Earth too. And it's kind of like, why are they so quick? why are they so quick to get them back onto Earth 2 and introduce this new Harrison Wells and split up her and it just feels like unnecessary drama.
And just as she and
Wally were getting really close, yeah. And now they've split them up for that heartbreaking drama of them loving each other but being separated across two Earths. Like, yeah.
Yeah, so that that didn't make much sense. We also have a brand new Harrison Wells, who I already cannot stand.
He's like hipster Harrison.
He's so annoying. Oh my god. Every time he opens his mouth, I just cringe.
Yeah.
Oh, he's so annoying. It's not right that Harrison Wells is not, like, curt and tearsome. Like, it doesn't compute.
So, I did really quite enjoy the different versions of Harrison Wells that there were on all of these different Earths. And he's basically like, no, 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 no.
And we keep in mind, Harry did not like this one either, and Harry has good gut instincts, so Harry didn't like him, I didn't like him, I don't think we should trust him.
Yeah, which the promo for next week pretty much suggests that they don't trust him either, or at least they're a little bit wary about trusting.
Which they should be, because Harrison Wells is not meant to be the way this Harrison Wells is. And then our last big development.
Yes.
Caitlin uses her powers to free Barry from a mirror. And she ends up going home. She freezes her shower, which damn, that sucks. Yeah. I would not be happy about that. And then she gets out of the shower. Her lips are blue and she's got like a roguelike streak of white in her hair.
And she cuts that out.
Killer Frost is coming. Yeah. But will she be an evil Killer Frost, which would make zero sense?
Yeah, it really would make no sense for her to be evil. Because I don't think it's the power inherently will change her. She just, it's like Sisko. You know, Sisko had a doppelganger who was evil, but he's not evil. So it doesn't make sense.
And Caitlyn's doppelganger wasn't evil to start with, but she also had a brother who died, and this Caitlyn never had that.
Yeah. I wonder if, like, her lips, like, when she warms up, if her lips will, like, go back to normal, or whether we'll see her, like, rocking really cool lipstick colors to hide the fact that her lips are kind of blue.
That would be something.
Yeah, right? Where she's, like, just wearing, like, bright red lipstick to, like, cover it up, and everyone's like, "What? Why the red lipstick?" And then she's just like, "I just wanted to change."
I just feel like her keeping this a secret is unnecessary drama, because obviously she's afraid of the doppelganger that she met, but she met Sisko's and yeah. knows and was never afraid of Sisko becoming Reverb. And if she wants help with this, who better to turn to than people most qualified to help her and care about her?
Yeah, exactly. And especially talking to Sisko about it, because it's pretty much exactly the same thing he had to go through. Coming to terms with the fact that he has powers and he has a doppelganger that's evil. Like,
and she might be working through the revelation that she didn't have this before.
Yeah.
And so might be a little upset with Barry, which would be understandable, because Barry is very often a dumbass.
Oh, he's like a really naughty puppy.
Yes, he is. That is exactly how he is. He is a naughty puppy.
Yeah, just sit in the corner, think about what you've done.
But I just, it makes very little sense, because she other people that she cares about hide their powers. And then was, like, hurt when Sisko revealed he'd been hiding it. Like, so she's been through this from the other side, so she knows how everyone will react.
Yeah.
And it's not bad.
Yeah. It just, a lot of stuff that they're doing seems to just be, well, we need to make some kind of drama and conflict, and so we're gonna do this. Even though we've already established that this doesn't work.
Yeah, so that doesn't feel like it's working for me.
Yeah, I just want her to be honest about it. Because the thing is, she used her powers for doing a really good thing. She managed to break Barry out of the mirror because they had to get it to a certain temperature. And they couldn't artificially do it through science. So she used her powers in order to be able to do it and get Barry out of the mirror faster, because otherwise things would have gone far worse for them if she hadn't done that. So she's using her powers for good. So, eh.
Yeah. I don't get it. I don't like it, but we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
All right. Arrow.
Yes.
Let me just say that self-righteous Oliver is my least favorite flavor of Oliver. And that was pretty much the Oliver we had for this whole episode.
Yeah, I kind of had hoped that we were past self-righteous Oliver, but...
Nope.
No. I think it's the same kind of thing that we get in, like, some of the other, CW shows, is that when it's convenient for them to bring back particular character traits, even though they've mostly moved past them, they will do it to, like, get themselves out of a corner they've written themselves into.
Yeah. So I did not like so much that Oliver was like, "I know what's right for Diggle." Yeah. And so I am going to make this decision for him. It might have been different if they'd been showing Diggle, like, having a hard time in prison for an episode or two. Like, we saw him being very guilty, but that sort of makes sense as to why he would want to stay in prison. So maybe if they had spent another episode or two with him in prison and then, like, having issues with the other inmates or something.
Yeah, that would have made a little bit more sense, but that's not what they did, unfortunately. So...
yeah, so, like, I don't... I mean, I agree that Diggle doesn't need to be in prison for killing Andy because he was a threat. And he was going to keep coming after Diggle's family unless he was dead. And there was no rehabilitating him. He proved it. So, and he also took on the guilt of Laurel, which, again, like, that's not his fault. That's Andy's fault. That's Damien Dark's fault.
Yeah.
Put the blame where it lies.
Yes, absolutely.
But I don't know. Like, while I don't think he needed to be in prison, like, at least Felicity was trying to respect his decision. And maybe they could have tried to talk him out of it after a time. But it just, it didn't feel right that just immediately they're like, okay, you don't know what's good for you. We're breaking you out of this. And it's the white guy doing it for the black guy, of course.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, that was really uncomfortable. It's kind of like, you know, if, yeah, like you said, if they'd shown Diggle where he's not in, like, where he's having a tough time, or it's very clear that he is not making good decisions, like, he's making really bad decisions because he is trying to punish himself, so to speak. If they'd have drawn that out a little bit more and shown him, like, really falling apart and self-destructing, then I could have accepted it a little bit more. But because we don't see any of that, it just, it feels like they're dismissing him.
And then at the end, Diggle's like, don't ever change, Oliver. Basically, like, you were right. You know best. Like, no, he really doesn't. Don't encourage him. Stop that.
Yeah. Oliver does not always make good decisions. In fact, a lot of this season has been basically telling Oliver, you're not making good decisions. Trust these people. Do this. Make sure that you're not being an ass, essentially.
Though I guess, to be fair, it's Lila who comes to him asking him to do it, but he sort of takes charge of it.
Yeah.
And I can understand where Lila is coming from, because that's her husband, that's the father of her child. But that's another thing, is like, the consequences of this. Diggle is going to be a wanted man. How is he going to be able to be a good father to his child now?
Because he's not going to be able to be there. Because that'll be the first place that they'll look. And they'll probably put surveillance there because they will think, oh, if he's escaped and if he's got out, the first place he will go is back to his family. Or he will probably try and get to his family in some way or some form. So therefore, we'll put, like, 24-hour surveillance on his house and on Lila and on the kid. Like, you know, that's kind of going to be a given for him breaking out of prison, so...
I have to imagine they'll clear his name eventually, since they went out of their way to show that he was framed.
Yeah, which I would expect that to happen eventually, but in the short term...
Exactly. In the meantime, like, the entire family is now in danger. And remember, Lila is leading a government organization right now.
Yeah, so he's gonna what, sit in the Arrow Cave, and basically that's gonna be his prison instead, because he's not gonna be able to leave it. He can't be seen in public. He can't do anything like normal people do. He can't risk being seen, so he can't even go out and be an asset to the team and help Oliver and the team, because if someone catches a glimpse of him and recognizes him, they can just out him to the authorities, and that's it. Done. So what? He swapped one prison for another, but the other one just has better tech? Like,
I mean, he'll go out with his helmet on so he can, like, help be a vigilante, but he can't, you know, live a life
No.
until they get his name cleared.
And he can't even actively try and do that either, because he can't go out investigating, because he can't run the risk of being seen. So he's going to have to be very passive.
I imagine he'll be, like, sitting in the arrow cave with Felicity while Felicity tries to find out what happened or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, like, this one's difficult because Diggle does not belong in prison.
No.
But at the same time, all of his choices and his agency, essentially, have been taken away by people who think they know better than him. And that rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree.
Our other plotline in this episode was that Felicity basically has to lead the team against Tobias Church, who decides to make his move. And I thought this was actually a pretty good plotline. So one of Tobias Church's men, the vigilante team, takes him out and they bring what he stole to evidence. Well, he was supposed to get caught all along because this thing has been wired to blow. So it blows up the evidence locker while Quentin and the DA are in it. They come in, get a bunch of guns, and then go to blow up the ACU. Like, he is not kidding around.
Nope. No, he really is not. He's actually fairly damn competent, and it's like, wow. Wow.
Yeah, I liked this a lot. Just showing how competent he is. And he moves quickly. And he gets involved in it. He's not afraid to get his hands dirty, which is kind of a gross thing to say, but at the same time, like, he's not making people do his dirty work. So he's very dangerous. And so the team keeps trying to stop him, and Curtis gets a knife to the back. And so Wild Dog / Renee basically gives himself up as a distraction so they can get Curtis out, and he gets captured by Church. So that's not good.
No. Really not good at all. And I'm really worried.
And Church is smart enough to realize, hey, he works with the Green Arrow. He probably knows who he is. Yeah. Let's keep this one alive to get the information we need.
Yes, exactly. And he's, like, Tobias is, like, horribly competent in, like, a scary way that most of the villains on this show haven't been so far. So he's terrifying in that respect. Because I would believe that somehow he'd be able to get the information out of Wild Dog.
Yeah, so, and the preview indicates that he does get the information out, so.
I haven't seen the preview for the next episode of Arrow yet, so. Oh, no.
Yeah, it looks pretty scary. So, yeah, I quite actually enjoyed this plotline. I like the team having to come together. Felicity also had to kind of bring Rory back into the fold. And I still can't understand a word he says when he's in his costume. So, they need to tone down the effects because I can't understand it at all. But, you know, he quits the team because, you know, he understands that it's not Felicity's fault, but that doesn't change his emotional response to looking at her, which I get. And so she goes to him and says, you know, you're a reminder to me of what I did, but we both want to move forward. And so he ends up coming back so they can both try to move forward, which I liked.
Yeah. Yeah, I really do like that as well, because it's at least some character growth, I guess, rather than dragging out this drama to kind of have them, or have Felicity being able to blame herself more, I guess. I don't know. It feels like a better way to deal with it.
And it feels like an organic response where he's not misplacing blame. He says, I know it's not her fault. She made a difficult decision, but you can know something intellectually and still have an opposite emotional response. And I think that's a perfect way to look at how Rory's dealing with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now the team is going to go look for Wild Dog and deal with the consequences of whatever Tobias Church found out.
Yeah.
All right. One more episode.
Yes. Oh, that, no.
fair warning. Neither of us are particularly happy with this one. No. Legends of Tomorrow. I ripped this one apart in my recap. So basically, this episode was about as typical a white savior narrative as you can get.
Yeah.
And I was worried about it. I know Danya was worried about it. We talked about it. When we looked at the promo pictures, we said, oh, I hope this doesn't turn into a white savior. It did.
Yes. It was really uncomfortable. And also did some really weird things that they haven't done whenever they've gone to any other country that doesn't primarily speak English. Like when they've been in Germany or Russia or anywhere. Absolutely anywhere. You know, they've spoken English start to finish because we have come to expect the fact that that translator that they've swallowed means that, yes, we're hearing English, but they're not actually speaking English. It just turns it into, like, a universal translator. So they are actually speaking the language of that country. We're just hearing everything in English. So I don't understand why, because they were in Japan, we got random Japanese words thrown in.
Yes, I wrote that in my recap. It was very much like exploiting a sense of exoticism.
Yeah.
Say that three times fast.
Yeah, because they were just throwing in konnichiwa and
gaijin and...
Which, you know, they have very literal translations. Even seppuku has a literal translation. Konnichiwa is just good morning. Gaijin just means foreigner. Okay? And seppuku is ritual suicide.
Yeah, you know what it felt like to me? Reading fan fiction for anime where the writers throw in random Japanese words.
I've got flashbacks to my Dragon Ball Z days where I'm like reading fic and I'm like, just like you're scrolling through and it just like has baka in the middle of it and you're like, they're going, no, just write idiot. We're reading this in English.
Or like random honorifics or something.
Yes. Yeah.
I was having flashbacks to my anime fanfiction days as well. And yeah. I was like watching the episode and I said, I know what this is. Yeah, that's exactly what it felt like. And I did not like it.
No, and it also just, the whole thing was very much the white man comes in and he saves the girl from the terrible marriage and they fall in love and he saves the day. And it's just kind of because none of the actual people who lived during that time who were native to Japan could do anything. It had to be the time traveling white people.
If they were, you know, resisting the shogun just fine until they brought 21st century technology and then they have to clean up the mess that they made. But no, they were all like being horribly oppressed before that. So that is a completely different dynamic.
Yeah. Which, and I get that they had to do something about the suit. They had to. You can't leave that technology with a tyrant, basically. So I get that they had to stop him, but it came across really badly. Because there were ways that they could have done this that could have been more interesting. Like, I would have been more interested in seeing Amaya coming to the forefront a little bit more, because she says to Sarah that she lived in an isolated village that she had to protect and she had to do that, and she so she has a lot in common with these people who are slightly isolated and being terrorized. Like, there was a really interesting narrative dynamic that could have been explored there to get Amaya working with the rest of the team and coming in and learning a little bit more about her and where she came from, and also easing into the rest of it with... So there was a foundation for something a lot more interesting there, but instead...
Or Masako should have been the one to win that fight, because she comes in, like, with the sword, which we find out, I didn't realize this till later, was Tatsu's. So she is Tatsu's ancestor. They said, like, they're the Yamashiros, and I'm sitting there going, who is Yamashiro? Like, is that a historical figure? And then I saw a post on Tumblr that was like, oh yeah, Tatsu. I was like, oh, duh.
Yeah.
So, like,
for anyone who doesn't know who Tatsu is, it's Katana. So if if you're not familiar.
So that was her sword that was being used. But she comes in with the sword to fight the Shogun, and then she just gets, like, knocked aside, and then the white guy comes in. Like, that is the literal embodiment of white savior. The girl is, like, splayed out on the ground about to die, and then the white man comes in.
Yes, and also the weird romance. Like, that came out of nowhere. Like, it was unnecessary.
That's a trope.
Yeah, that's absolutely a trope. Like, it just hit every single trope that you could possibly hit when you're using an Asian setting. It's basically like The Last Samurai.
So if anyone wants to read TV tropes, you've got Whitey or Mighty Whitey, and Mighty Whitey and Mellow Yellow are the tropes.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I will say, did like Sarah and Amaya.
Yes, that relationship is very interesting. Also really like the development with Ray losing the suit, because now he has no choice but to own up to the fact that he's a hero as much as anyone else out of that suit. And he has to basically come to terms with that now, because he doesn't have the suit to fall back on anymore. And it's been like a crutch where he's had a lot of people basically being like, oh, you're just a guy in the suit. The suit is what makes you a hero. And he's started buying into that a lot more. So now he's basically at the point where he's like, well, without the suit, I'm nobody. So now he has to realize that actually what makes him a hero is what he does, who he is inside. The suit just gives him an outlet in order to be able to be a hero, but he is a hero, because just putting on the suit doesn't make you a hero, as you see from the Shogun wearing the suit. You know, it's just a tool at the end of the day, and now he has to reckon with that. And I actually really like that he'll have to do that. He has to face up to that now.
And one other development is that Jax and Stein come across a hidden compartment. And in that hidden compartment, they find a message sent to Rip from Barry, except this Barry is from 2056. So he's in his 60s at this point, sending a message to Rip. And Stein and Jax decide that they're just not going to tell anyone about it.
Because we all know that secrets turn out so well in the end. Like, what the hell? What the hell?
So, what do you think the message is?
I don't know, because it's got to be something to do with the mid-season finale, when we're going to get all of these villains coming together, and basically, because we know that Leonard is coming back as a villain in the mid-season finale or around then on Legends, and we know that they're all going to team up, and we know that it's going to be like this big thing, and
Malcolm's coming in. Blech.
So we know that's happening. So it's got to tie into that in some way, right?
But how does that relate to 40 years in the future?
If they're able to travel through time because of the Reverse Flash, like...
It seems most likely to me to be about the Reverse Flash.
Yeah.
Because they are trying to figure out who killed Rex Tyler, and we know it was Eobard Thawne, and he's the one who has the most connection to Barry.
Yeah.
So I assume it's something related to him, but I have no idea what.
Yeah. It's got to be something to do with that core villain that's, like, just messing everything up. They're all messing everything up. Oh my god, the poor timelines.
Yeah. I guess I just want to, before we move on, just give some appreciation to Mick really wanting to meet ninjas.
I know. Oh my god. And he steals the goddamn outfit.
And then Amaya gives him one of the throwing stars.
Yes.
And Sarah, I also loved when Amaya's like, there's no such thing as ninjas. And she's like, I am basically a ninja. Yeah. And I was like, yes, you are.
Basically, yeah.
Loved it. So. Yeah. Small things I liked, the vast majority did not like about this episode. But next episode, Civil War and Zombies, so that should be fun.
Yeah. I'm not a big zombie fan myself. Like, I never really got into the zombie thing, so this will be an interesting episode for me, but hey. Yeah.
I think this one will be a lot more fun, I'm anticipating.
Okay. I'm really, like, super, like, not into zombies, like, at all. So it's, like, one of those things that I just never got into, full stop, so.
I'm not either. I got through, like, 3 seasons of The Walking Dead, and
well,
that was.
You did better than me.
I was really struggling that far. But I feel like this will be more humorous because Legends is just so much lighter.
Yeah.
So I'm surprisingly, for a zombie story, I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be fun. So, but yeah, so that is this week in television. We have a ton of movie news, by which we mean 2 really short stories, and I will turn that over to Danya.
Yeah. So production is wrapped on Thor Ragnarok. So they're all done. They put up a load of videos and selfies and all sorts to celebrate the end of filming, and we got to see our first look at Valkyrie and Tessa Thompson with, like, her makeup and her actual look, which was super exciting because she looks so damn cool. Like, I love the look so far. But we got to look around the whole set, which, again, it's basically a sci-fi space wasteland. And they also teased that there will be a character from Planet Hulk in Thor Ragnarok. So we might be seeing more Planet Hulk things coming in. So a few really cool things dropped during that. It was like a 15-minute video of Taika Waititi. I love saying his name so much, by the way. It's like the most fun name to say. Taika Waititi took us around the set, which looked really cool. But I'm surprisingly really excited for Thor Ragnarok. It's like just an epic space road trip movie.
Yeah, I am very excited for anything Taika Waititi, basically. Like, the more I see and hear about him and from him, the more I kind of fall in love. So yeah. He gives me optimism for Thor Ragnarok.
He really does. I didn't think I'd get this excited about a Thor movie, but hey, here I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the other bit of news that we've got is that Tim Miller has dropped out of Deadpool 2 due to creative differences with Ryan Reynolds, apparently. So there's no real way to know exactly what happened there. But we've already got another director coming in. So David Leitch? I don't know how you say his surname, who is the director of John Wick, is going to be directing Deadpool 2, which is, for me, a better choice than Quentin Tarantino, because I know a lot of people thought that Quentin Tarantino would be a good choice for Deadpool, but I respectfully will disagree. I think Quentin Tarantino has a style, but I don't think it would be right for Deadpool.
You normally get worried when you hear about directors leaving over creative differences, but then you know how much Ryan Reynolds loves Deadpool.
Yeah.
So that makes me less worried, just because I feel like he is very protective of that character in the story.
I'm absolutely not worried at all. Like, not even a little bit. Because Ryan Reynolds has basically championed this character more than I think anyone has championed that character in a comic book movie before. So I have, I'm not worried that the directors have changed over creative differences, but I think it's a fairly strong choice of director to come in. I like John Wick. I thought it was a pretty solid movie.
I haven't seen it, so could not say, but I've heard very good things.
I recommend it. I thought it was pretty fun. So yeah. No Comic Corner this week either, but I will say just go out and buy Mockingbird. Just anything you can get your hands on. Go out, buy as many of the issues as you possibly can. There are only 8. It is her only solo comic. It has been cancelled, and people were really horrible to the writer of it, just because on the cover of the final issue, Bobby is wearing a t-shirt that says, "Ask me about my feminist agenda." And considering Bobby is a very feminist character, it was very in character for her to be wearing that, and it made a lot of sense, but people decided to just drive the creator off Twitter, and they hurled abuse at her, and it was really horrific treatment of a female writer for Marvel. It's been really horrible to watch. So go out, buy Mockingbird, especially buy issue 8. In fact, I had Mockingbird as a standing order, so I was getting all of the issues in all of the time, and I'm actually really devastated that it's been cancelled. I'm not shocked, because as much as she's gotten more of a boost because of S.H.I.E.L.D., she's still not a major character in the Marvel Universe. She's not hugely popular, but her solo series was fantastic. Just because she's a minor character, it didn't pick up as much steam, I think, as they were hoping. So they cancelled it, which sucks. But I guess go put your money out there and show Marvel why they made a terrible mistake. And show Chelsea Kane, who is the writer, why she's going to be greatly missed. Because she was just great. She was so great.
And do things to make stupid fanboys angry.
Yeah, because they're the kind of ones that you don't want involved in the comic community, because they are only interested in hurling about abuse and driving people away from the community. And you don't want that. You want it. Like, I fully get that it was not going to be a comic for everyone. It was very, very specific in that it was always going to appeal most to women, and it was always going to be very niche, because there were going to be a very small subset of people who would be interested in Bobby specifically. So I get that it was never going to be a comic for everyone. But at the same time, when comics aren't for everyone, that's not a bad thing. It broadens the community. And also, if you read out of your comfort zone, you sometimes have discussions about characters and situations and comics that you maybe never thought that you would ever have. So,
and don't be an asshole gatekeeper, because that helps nobody.
Yes. Essentially, like, boom, mic drop.
There's your lesson. All right, so feedback. We got a couple of longer comments on Hypeable, so I will take the first one, since this is about a comment that I made. Michael Gustini said, "Good to have this podcast back. DC Films defense alert. I don't understand how you guys can call what Superman did at the end of Man of Steel murder, or to say that he did it casually. It was clearly a heart-wrenching choice for him, and he only did it because Zod put him on the spot by directly threatening the lives of innocent civilians. The scream he let out after doing it made it clear that it killing Zod completely destroyed him emotionally. I thought it was a very clever way of adding stakes to the character by forcing him to acknowledge the fact that in order to protect others, he may sometimes have to sacrifice his own morals, just like any soldier. Cavill Superman is without a doubt a completely different interpretation of the character, and I understand why it's not one most people want to see, but I think it's a fascinating take on a character who's largely been the same for decades. So I thought this was a nicely written response to our discussion about Tyler Hoechlin's Superman and not killing the Metallos. I will just say I still do not like that choice at the end of Man of Steel, because I feel like Superman is not just like any soldier. He is meant to be aspirational. He is meant to be something we all look up to and aspire to be. So I don't feel like we should have someone who is aspirational be the one bending his morals. I think he should be the one looking for alternative and creative solutions. So because of that, it just doesn't work for me. Yes. I want to see him be exceptional, not typical.
Yes. Oh, that's such a good way of putting it. I couldn't have said it better. Superman isn't a soldier. Like, that, it's, that's the bottom line. He's not. So that's why I find it so hard to accept that version of Superman. And in fact, it's the only way that Earth knows how to deal with him, because he gets a soldier's funeral as well. Like, he gets a military funeral. Spoiler alert, I guess. For Batman v Superman, he's dead. Except he's totally not dead.
Totally not, yeah, exactly.
But I just, for something about it just doesn't gel with me, and I think Caitlin nailed it. But I completely understand that for some people it does work, and some people like it, and that's fine. Like, that's okay. We don't all have to like the same thing at all.
I think it works in the world that Snyder created. It makes sense in the interpretation he has of that character, but that is, like, hashtag not my Superman.
Yeah. Which, you know, I can reconcile with the fact that for a lot of people that is now their Superman, but for me it just doesn't sit right, and it never will be my Superman. But I can also respect that Cavill is doing a great job with what he's been given.
Yeah, but thank you for that great response, Michael. That was very respectful and well supported, so thank you. You want to take the other one, Danya?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is from, I guess that's Lag, right? L-A-G?
Yeah.
And says, I'm sad you guys aren't enjoying S.H.I.E.L.D. this season. I'm loving it. I've always enjoyed the way the show is willing to evolve in style and tone. It's also able to challenge the show's premise and the group dynamics throughout its run. These characters have all come so far since we were first introduced to them. I also appreciate that season 4 started with the core group fractured and didn't automatically fix that in the premiere. Shows rarely take their time to really develop arcs over long periods of time, and I think it's something that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does well. While I like the Arrowverse shows, they tend to operate on a procedural villain of the week basis, especially The Flash. The season-long stories on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. are something I really enjoy, even if it does require a slower burn. I'm actually kind of hoping that the slower burn will tie together soon, just because at the moment, for me, it's just really murky and unclear. And I'm finding myself tuning out because of that. Whereas in previous seasons, there was just enough, like, of a balance between some of the more procedural elements with the overarching story that you had something on a short-term basis that could continually keep your attention and get you solving that while threading through the overarching story with that, which is kind of the balance I prefer more. Whereas when you just go with just an overarching storyline where it's not entirely clear where it's going, I start kind of, like, glazing over a little bit. But like I said, I've said it multiple times, I don't know exactly what's making me just tune out so much this season. I have no idea.
Yeah, and I wonder if this would be solved on like a binge rewatch of the whole season once it's done. But because we're going week to week, it feels even more stretched out than it would if we were watching a whole bunch of episodes right in a row.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm glad you are enjoying S.H.I.E.L.D. this season, Lag, and that at least somebody is, even if we aren't.
Yeah, and I'm sure that there are, I'm sure that there are a few people who are really enjoying it, but yeah, for some reason I'm just not connecting with it in the same way that I have been previously. And I'm hoping that at some point, like, it'll just be like a switch that'll flip again, and it'll just all click for me, and I'll be like, I'll go back and I'll rewatch some of the episodes and it'll all come together for me, which has happened with shows before. I think even multiple times on this podcast, I've like not been happy with like the initial few episodes because something just hasn't clicked for me. And then suddenly I'll just like switch gears completely because something has just like connected it all together. And then I've gone back and rewatched stuff and gone, oh, of course, why did I not see that?
So we shall see. All right, so thank you guys for getting in touch with us. We hope more of you will get in touch. We only had one response to our question of the week, so I blame Danya for this because it was her question.
Rude.
So her rude question of the week last week was, what video game and superhero crossover would you like to see? And Anthony Ciano said that I would love to see the Flareverse being stuck in the Dark Souls / Bloodborne universe because I doubt they would make it.
Does anyone ever really make it, Anthony? Because I know that I sucked so bad at that game. I died all of the time playing it. Like, so much. I was really bad at that game.
So hopefully you guys will get more responses to this week's question of the week, which is in honor of our, what, Earth 19 or something?
It was Earth 19,
Harrison, yeah. Wells. How would you lure in your doppelganger, bring another version of you to your Earth? So
just stop broadcasting Hawkeye stuff.
And for me, it would be Sarah Lance.
Yeah.
So send us your thoughts on Twitter at Hero Hype Podcast. You can email us, herohypepodcast@gmail.com. You can tell us all about this, anything you thought about our discussions on the episodes, the things you thought from this post on Hypeable. Give us a review on iTunes. That'd be awesome so more people can find us. And that's it for this week. So again, sorry for being a little bit late. We should be back on track after this. And until next time, I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Danya.
And we'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Did you see any of this? Caitlin? Caitlin, are you still there?
Oh, I was on mute.
Oh. Oh, dear.
I thought I was muting my mic, and I was muting the Skype call.
Whoops.
My bad.
Yeah.